This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Rob Reiner and his wife Michelle were found stabbed to death in their Brentwood home on Sunday afternoon. Their son Nick, who has struggled publicly with addiction and mental illness since he was a teenager, is now in custody, held without bail, charged with the murder. The night before, all three were at Conan O'Brien's Christmas party. Witnesses say Nick and Rob got into a very loud argument, loud enough that the room noticed. Rob and Michelle left less than 24 hours later. They were dead. Now hindsight makes everything look a little more obvious, but there's a real question here about warning signs. What was visible, what got missed, and what the people around Nick Reiner could have realistically done or not at all because the system doesn't allow for it. Robin Dreek is a former FBI special agent, chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, and just one of the best people I know at reading human behavior. Robin, when you hear about the very public argument the night before a double homicide at which should be I can't imagine the place that wouldn't be more fun and exciting would be Conan O'Brien's Christmas party. Right. You know, right. I don't think it's a downer. I think it's, you know, but for it to be something like this taking place there in front of all those people, I mean, this is like the stuff, you know, if you're going to have an argument with your kid, it's usually like they're an 8-year-old, not a 32-year-old, right, and your 78-year-old father. What does that tell you about what's going on here?
It's the tip of an iceberg of a lot of leakage. You know, that is, and what we're seeing there is massive leakage of what was really going on. And the hugest challenge of situations like this is, you see pile upon pile of massive empathy, lots of caring, lots of compassion that was going out, not just from the Reiners, but, you know, their collective friends around them. I mean, you're seeing a lot of grace being given and caring. And unfortunately, that can also lead to this, because people feel helpless about what can you do. And so that's where this went, unfortunately. I mean, it's just horrendous.
Yeah, I mean, and the reality is, and we can get into more of these points in a little bit, but I mean, just to kind of to throw it out there, in this country, I mean, look at the situation. They had the resources to do and provide the best possible help they could, and they did. Many times. He had been in and out of rehab 17 times by the time when he was still a late teenager. He's 32 now, so who knows what the actual number was. He experienced homelessness several times over. So this kid, this adult, went from, you know, and experienced all different aspects of this. And when you're a parent in that sort of situation, your options are one of two things. Either you get to be held hostage by the addict and mentally ill person, and basically you are going to be there for them, you know, but you're a human being too, and so are they, and both have autonomy. And if one goes too far, things don't end well, which happened here, you know, or good luck. Here's the streets. Hopefully you have some sort of epiphany and you don't remain homeless. There's not a lot of in between because you can't force someone into a treatment center. You can't force someone into a mental health institution. They don't really even exist like that anymore. Right. The rights are all there for someone. Should they not want to get help? Well, guess what? Their rights went out. And we'll get to more of that in a moment, but I just want to establish that for anyone watching. I want to talk more about what was going on here, where you have the addiction, the homelessness, the rehab, the mental illness. From your experiences, we were talking about behavioral escalation and patterns in people. How does one know, or do you, when someone goes from troubled to dangerous?
Well, you're looking at exactly what we're seeing here. We saw the tip of the iceberg with leakage, and we're also hearing it from a lot of other people in his life that there was a lot of anger, a lot of, you know, the victimization language, because I think that's really the key of crux of this, is that he apparently most likely was directing his rage, his frustration, his psychosis, you know, whatever mentally was going on, because that's the leading cause for patricide, is mental illness as well as drug abuse and addiction. I mean, he really, unfortunately, fits that profile of someone who is really susceptible to doing what he did. And the warning signs are there. There is leakage over time. But like you said in the lead up to that, Tony, here's the greatest challenge. I've been racking my brains on this because I've been watching you and following your great coverage of this for a couple of days now. There is really only one thing in life that you can really do at this point as a parent, and is the absolute toughest, most impossible thing to do. And they didn't do it because it is that impossible. And it's not because they didn't want to. You have to choose your survival first, by meaning there's really the only option you can do is, so you got the leakage, you got the escalation, you're seeing the violence, you're seeing the anger, you're seeing the victim mentality, where over time they start placing blame for their lot in life on you. Mm-hmm. And so then you have this guilt because you're listening to the words, and we are such horrible critics of ourselves. I mean, we never give ourselves the grace we give others. And just looking at the Reiners and their backgrounds and the kind of people they are, the humanitarians they are, the people they surround them with, I mean, they're surrounding themselves as well as very caring, compassionate people. And so you want to keep giving that grace, thinking grace and love can triumph all. I mean, you've written movies about it. But unfortunately, that's not the reality. The reality is there's two things you can do. Kick them out and get a restraining order and distance yourself, because literally they're going to escalate to this. And unfortunately, in this case, if you did that, I think it would have come out against someone, because someone that is that deep into mental health issues and abuse, they're always going to find someone to place that blame on and that rage on. It's going to come out on someone. Or you keep them in the home and you got to lock them down. Lock them down in the sense of, not you can't physically restrain them necessarily, but I don't know if you could remove every single implement of damage in that house. There's really another option.
It's like a padded room. I mean, and you can't. I mean, then you're holding someone's hostage at that point. That has, you know, right. And I mean, that seems to be just, that is where we are so stuck here. And it's not just this country. I've heard from so many people in the last couple of days since we've been talking about this, from other countries, going, it's not just a United States problem. We have this issue where we want to certainly balance rights, and people certainly have rights, with mental health and them being the judge of and the captain of their own ship, basically. But the problem is, when the captain's drunk and blindfolded and doesn't know what's going on, and everyone around is seeing that he's going to crash this thing into an iceberg, who's the crazier one? The one who says, well, he's got the right to do the ship. It's his ship. He can just keep going. Or everyone around who's seeing this coming and not doing a damn thing. It's maddening. We see this in so many cases, because rights are being protected. But at what point is it not a right? It's you're putting people in extreme danger, including themselves.
I know. And it's one of those unfathomable, you know, choices, because just like when everyone gets on a plane and you're briefed, you know, in the event of emergency and depersonalization, mm-hmm. you know, the oxygen mask comes down, and mask yourself up before you mask your children up, because if you die first, then you can't help your child. Basically, that's why it's done that way. Mm-hmm. Also, when you think about any time a mass shooting happens and there's an active shooter someplace, what happens is when organizations like schools and churches and groups that actually do active shooter training, what happens is they're trained to understand what's going to happen in these events. And what happens is the first responders are going to ignore the people bleeding and dying on the ground so they can go and try to get the shooter before they kill more. Mm-hmm. And think about that choice. You, as someone trying to save lives, have to make the choice that you might have to sacrifice these as you're going to go try to save more. And it's the same thing here. In order for the Reiners to be able to continue in life, they're going to have to place their life ahead of their sons.
Yeah.
I mean, think about that. That is, how do you do that?
Exactly. And that's, you know, I don't fault them in any way, shape, or form. They were doing the what they thought was the best path 100%. For them. Because the thing is, these people tried everything. Yep. It wasn't their first rodeo. It was basically playing ping pong with their addicted son. Yep. They let him go a couple times to go be homeless and hit rock bottom. And he came back and, you know, and it did appear that there were times where, you know, maybe he's making a turnaround. Maybe he's getting his stuff together. And it looks like they held onto that hope because, you know, addicts will do that. They'll come back and forth. They'll give you nuggets of hope for a while there. And as a parent, you're always going to be hopeful for your kid.
You know, and when you're dealing with people that are in the throes of deep, deep addiction, their ability to get their hands on whatever they need to get their hands on to service that addiction, it's all, first of all, that's their entire lives. Servicing their addiction becomes their entire why in life. You will see people do the most innovative, inventive things in the world to get their fix. So these things, you can be the most adept investigator in the world, but you're still going to miss it all. I mean, I tune into so much social media and I watch a lot of these things on TikTok because I'm addicted to human behavior. And plus, you know, in my own life and people around me, their lives, I've seen people go through the most amazing gyrations where they're in a completely dry house. Keys are out of cars. Batteries are taken out of vehicles. You know, phones are turned off, and yet they still have the ability somehow to manipulate someone in their lives or some situation to get the fix they need to get. And they're in complete lockdown anyway. And that's what you're dealing with. And as a parent, you think you can save your child. And unfortunately, this is another great example. And again, there's about 200 to 300 cases like this a year. It's a very low percentage, by the way. Patricide, it's a very low percentage. But out of the ones that do manifest in this, which is about 200 or 300 of them across the country a year, he does fit, unfortunately, a very, very recognizable profile of exactly what happens.
Yeah. We're hearing, and a lot of people obviously speculating, well, what happened here? Did he just snap? That's the one you get the most. You know, after something like this, in your experience, do people actually just snap, or is there almost always a trail of escalation that got ignored or rationalized or maybe wasn't even seen, maybe was completely internalized by him?
Right.
And then suddenly, boom.
Right. It's definitely an escalation. It'll look like there's always an escalation with some sort of triggering event. And a triggering event could have been, just put your, you know, thought hat on, the conjecture hat. And, you know, so say you're at Conan O'Brien's party. This has been escalating. Your dad is trying to say, hey, come be with us, stay with us, stay with us, stay with us. Because why would he want his son to be with him? Because if he's at home alone, that's not a good thing for sobriety, right? And so he brings him to these events, makes him do these events. And so in order for the son to make his way through these events, he's going to do some drugs, do a little pre-gaming. And so he shows up the events already inebriated, already under the influence of something. And then it keeps escalating from there. And so, but before that event at Conan O'Brien's, you're going to see months and months and years of that continued escalation. Some seesaws in there we saw with sobriety attempts, you know, again, with great attempts, but this guaranteed it was an escalation. And most likely that, you know, when you're doing that volume of any sort of substance abuse, you're going to have a potentially psychotic break and have a moment where you lose your shit. And that's exactly what happened. And all that rage then gets directed at who you're placing the blame on. And when you put your thought experiment hat on with this one, you're saying, all right, so if he's got years and years of blaming his parents for his lot in life and they keep trying to save him, he's not being saved, he's still going down this road and he keeps doing it, that amount of guilt, that amount of feeling less than as a parent, that I'm not doing enough, look, I still haven't saved him, but he's saying it's still my fault. You see that intertwined escalation of wanting to keep saving him, even though he's really unstable, only he can save himself. And then you have that final break where he just takes that rage out because inhibitions are now lowered. because of being under the influence of something, and he just loses. The thing I actually found from I did the research, as you know, I always do on these things.
Yeah,
I found surprising was that the because there's always anytime you deal with parents or people like this, a lot of times I was thinking that you get a lot of death and suicide. You know, that a lot of times the murderer will commit suicide pretty soon after. But in these cases, the patricide is actually very low probability of suicide afterwards. Because I would think that someone with that kind of depression and that kind of mental illness would actually be high on the suicide angle. I was actually kind of surprised they found him alive. But from the studies and research, is actually it's a low percentage of patricide like this actually are suicidal.
Wow.
I know. He fit a very, very recognizable pattern. In other words, so here, if someone had, think about this, if this hadn't been the Reiners and this had been one of the 200 to 300 other people that are murdered across the country, especially as a couple, and the first thing you would do if you're developing profile, and it looks like he's got lots of healthy relationships outside, then we look inside, because that's what I do. I look, are we looking outside of family or inside? If I looked inside the family and I see children and I'm going to see this, if I'm developing or watching or looking for a profile, he would fit right in. All obstacles would be right on him immediately because of this, because he's so classically fitted, unfortunately.
And obviously right now, I mean, this is all our conjecture. He is going to be facing these charges innocent until proven guilty. But obviously the optics on this are pretty clear cut as of right now. My gosh.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.